Welcome back. Fred Grandy filling in for Andy Parks. Time to talk to a guy that has to be one of the busiest people at the Washington Times, Stephen Dynan, their political reporter, who was covering not one but two major events today. Of course, the Hagel hearing. But, Stephen, there was also the debt ceiling vote in the Senate, which I guess went 64 to 34. Was there anything enlightening in the debate before the vote was called?
Not so much enlightening in the debate, but the vote itself was very interesting. So in the House, when this came through, you know, this is a House Republican proposal.
Absolutely right.
And when it came through the House, it got 199 Republican votes and I think maybe 88 Democratic votes. But so almost all Republicans voted for it, but most Democrats voted against it.
Right.
In the Senate, it was the exact opposite. You had all but one Democrat voting for it, while you had about 75% of the Republicans voting against it, which is, you know, that's sort of the interesting things you get when you have split Congress and you have the challenges of governing versus the challenges of being in the, or the I guess the benefits of being in the minority. And so it's you know, essentially you had John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, who crafted this voting one way, and Mitch McConnell, the top Republican in the Senate, basically voting against, or not just basically, voting against the Boehner plan. So, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff going on there.
That's
going
to make for a very interesting conference when they sit down and try and put this thing together. But I guess they won't have to conference because it's the same bill, right?
Right. That's exactly right. So this is now on its way to the president, who is I actually haven't seen him say he'll sign it. What I've seen the White House say is they won't stand in the way of it. So you know, whether that means he signs it or allows it to become law without his signature, either way, this will become law, and we will for the next 3.5 months waive the debt limit.
Okay. I guess the question that I would ask is, if they can waive the debt limit for 3 months, why can't they waive it for 3 months, or for 3 years, or three generations? I mean, it's an arbitrary ceiling, is it not?
Sure, and the answer is that they absolutely could do that. You know, the debt limit is a statutory creation. They wrote a law. Congress wrote a law saying you're only allowed to borrow up to this much. They could repeal that law, and the government could borrow as much as it wants. In this case, though, you put your finger on something that's very important. Up until now, Congress has always adjusted the debt limit based on a dollar amount.
Yes.
This time around, they have set a time limit. And the theory behind that is that it gives both parties the space, the legislative space, to go ahead and craft budgets and begin this adult conversation on spending and deficits that Boehner has said for the last 2 years that the American people are ready for, but that people in Congress haven't really been ready for. So the goal in all this, the key part of, for Republicans, the key part of this bill is the no budget, no pay, the add-on provision, which says that if either chamber doesn't pass a budget out of the chamber by April 15th, that chamber, everybody in that chamber will start having their pay withheld until they do pass a budget.
All right. Well, then I would assume that with that kind of incentive, they will both come up with a budget. But knowing roughly what the parameters of the Republican House budget will look like, I'm curious to get your take on where the Democratic-controlled Senate budget would look like, because that would be a hell of a conference.
And the two things about that. First is sort of the reality check is that they don't actually have to conference them. They just need to have to come up with their own budgets. They've been very clear that that way they can at least have the public conversation, even if they never actually get a single congressional
You're
budget.
Right, because the Senate, the president doesn't actually sign these
Correct.
Budgets. It's a resolution, not a law. Right.
I'm as interested in you as you in seeing what Senate Democrats do. This will, of course, be the first time in 4 years they've written one. And back 4 years ago when they wrote it, the issue was how much government stuff can we pump into it? You know, health care and
sure.
what other and cap and trade. What other things can we write into the budget to get them done on the 50 vote rules that the budget allows and all that sort of stuff? This time around, the conversation is very different. It's about deficits and debt and tax rates. And so the reason they haven't written a budget for the last 4 years is because they're really hard. You remember this from your time up
here.
Dick, I'm sorry, Tom DeLay used to always say this is the toughest vote that any chamber takes every year. And because you have to make a lot of really big decisions in the same bill, that's why the Senate hasn't wanted to do this for the last 4 years, because it makes Democrats have to go on record as deciding, okay, do we vote for a budget that's way out of balance, or do we vote for spending cuts, or do we vote for tax increases?
But
the House Republicans have gone on the record saying we vote for pretty deep spending cuts, and Senate Democrats have not been willing to go one way or the other yet.
Well, let's say, for example, that they come up with a budget that is replete with taxes and is kind of in lockstep with President Obama's progressive agenda. That wouldn't surprise me at all. When the day is done and they've saved their pay for another 3 months, what have you got in terms of the debate? The Republicans are on one side, the Democrats are on the other. There won't be any compromise. We're back to square one.
Well, but here's what you do have, and this is what Republicans missed out on the last 3 years was, I hate to put it in these terms, but it's really this blunt, is hanging those votes around Democrats' necks.
Yeah, of course, you know, there is a political
dividend. Democrats
did
a great job of hanging the Republican votes on their budget around their necks. You want to cut Medicare, you want to cut Social Security. The Paul Ryan budget became a rallying cry for Democrats. If no Democrat had to ever, in the Senate, ever had to vote for any tax increases over the last 3 years because they never had a budget vote. This time around, they've already said that they will include more tax increases in the Democratic budget. That means that anybody who votes for that budget has voted for tax increases specifically, in addition to the rate hike we just had. This is a new tax hikes, and the Republicans think that they can finally use those votes against Democrats. I don't know whether that's true or not. I think, you know, maybe all the at this point the appetite is for tax increases to balance the budget, but at least you will actually have Democrats having to go up on the board with a vote versus the Republicans who went up on the board with a vote.
Well, I understand the political gamesmanship, but there's kind of a meta game over and above this, which is how strong can the economy and the country remain if we continue to dither back and forth. And I guess behind that is my question. If it looks as though the Republicans and Democrats are going to merely go to war with one another over the stakes in 2014, if I were the president, I would try and get as much done by executive order as I could, even if I challenged the whole separation of powers argument in the Constitution.
Yeah, the one thing about that, of course, is that spending is pretty clearly it would be tough for the president to argue that spending is his power, and that's, you know, that would be, I think executive power probably is very constrained in that area. He can do a lot of things on foreign policy. He can even apparently do things on employment and whatnot and,
yes,
and sort of personnel decisions, but spending is pretty clearly Congress's power, and his only role is to sign or veto. So I don't know how much he can get done by executive order. Having said all that, what you said is right. I mean, we may be in a situation here in 4 months where all we have is two blueprints, and, you know, if the American people want to take a look at them and make decisions between them, they can, or we can just ignore it and, as you said, set up 2014 and 2016 all over again.
Yeah, I think it's going to be part B and not part A. But in the time we have left, I did want you to weigh in on the Hagel hearing. I know you were covering that. Do you have any specific takeaways from that particular inquisition today?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that he didn't win. In fact, Senator John Cornyn, the second-ranking Republican in the Senate, who's already said he opposes Hagel, said that Hagel hasn't won any new hearts or minds out of today. And this is the decision for Republicans is, do they actually go ahead and filibuster Hagel's nomination? Do they have the votes and do they try that? It sounds like that decision has yet to be made. But so, you know, Chuck Hagel's a former Republican senator from Nebraska.
Sure.
I understand you played some of the audio from it earlier, so your listeners are familiar with some of the harsh questioning. His challenge is almost impossible here. He's a guy who annoyed a lot of Republicans when he was serving in the Senate,
yeah,
and now he comes to the Senate today and says and promises not to be, basically not to be annoying. And then he's also a guy who President Obama picked to be a straight shooter, you know, a voice of truth over at the Pentagon, and yet every single position he's been asked about today, he says, he's a yes man. He says, I agree with the Obama's position on this, I agree with the Obama position on this. So, you know, a guy with this sort of history, it's a very tough thing for him to basically hit that balance of, well, yeah, I am an independent maverick voice, but I'm telling you I agree with the Obama administration up and down the line. You know, where's the independence then? It's these confirmation hearings are really, in some ways, they're becoming less and less useful for all sides.
I agree.
Because the guys just have to go through this dance, and, you know, everybody then makes their decision not based on what he says, but based on a gut feeling about him. And, you know, if that's true, it's safe to say that the gut feeling about Hagel among most Republican senators is not very good.
So this morning I was watching some of the shows warming up before the hearing, and I saw an ad that is obviously running in North Carolina because it's a direct message to Democratic Senator Kay Hagan to not vote for Chuck Hagel for the usual reasons that we roll out: sympathy to Iran, animosity towards Israel, and a complete lack of awareness of the nuclear threat. But is that going to have any traction at all? Is her mind made up? Are there any Democrats that will pull away from Chuck Hagel at this point? Because I haven't seen it so far.
Yeah, I haven't either. We have seen a few who have withheld their position. I believe actually, you know, even Senator Bob Menendez, who's the new chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, which doesn't actually vet Hagel, but is still very important in all this. Last I saw, he had not committed to vote for Hagel. I think, though, here's the deal, is that I can't imagine any Democrat voting to filibuster Hagel. You might vote against him on final passage, but the key vote, that 60-vote threshold, I imagine all 55 members of the Democratic caucus probably back him. We've already seen one Republican, Thad Cochran, say that he'll support Hagel.
Yeah, I know they're friends.
Yeah, so the question is how many other Republicans go that way, and that's, you know, that's the decision Republicans have to face. Is if they lose five of their own, then you know the threat of a filibuster goes away anyway. So
well,
they're basically taking stock.
My odds are on confirmation. Stephen, thanks very much for the report.
My pleasure.
We'll be back right after this.